Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. We're so glad you joined us tonight. And we're also so glad that Spencer Kyle from the city of Seaside also joined us. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I know. We're going to talk.
I chatted with him a little bit before we went on the air.
Ooh, so we have some good tidbits.
I know the juicy questions I should ask now.
The juicy questions. Yep. Some political knockout questions.
He was going through the museum already.
Good.
Because you were late.
I was tardy. Life of a mom.
He's like, I gotta go. So this is going to be a 15-minute show now.
But yeah.
So we should get right to it. Let's do plugs first,
yes,
word,
plugs.
And then this day in history. So we have May 16th, Thursday Night Talks. Mike Lamy.
Oh, yes.
From Greenwood Cemetery. We've had him on the show.
Our favorite cemetery. One of our favorites.
We don't play favorites, but it's our favorite. It's a privately owned cemetery, and we've had Talking Tombstones there. He's performed in it. He is now doing a Thursday Night Talks for us. He's written two books on the cemetery because he wasn't a professional. He just bought a cemetery. Wow. And the books are pretty good.
Oh, I love it.
So that's
this Thursday night
at Fort George Brewery, Level Showroom. Lots of good. Doors open at 6. Program starts at 7. May 18th and 19th, Old Fashioned Fun and Games, sponsored by our friends at Columbia Memorial Hospital. Pediatrics. I always forget to add the pediatrics.
But this is our favorite.
It is fun. It is games. Favorite it's free. Games. It's on the grounds of the Flavel House each day from 11 to 4, May 18th, 19th. And then, of course, the Goonies 39th anniversary, June 7th, 8th, and 9th. We're still doing coming up with a lot of different things, but the Oregonian Challenge, we'll be doing that again. We're going to show the movie as part of the arts, the parks in the...
Arts in the park.
It's the movies in the park.
Movie, okay.
We're going to show the Goonies on the back of the Flavel House grounds, so that'll be fun.
Wonderful.
It'll be fairly late, though.
It'll
be like 9 o'clock, but it'll be fun. And lots of other great things.
Okay.
Well, all right, so what's our word?
I got a word. It's a retired word, an old word, historical word.
We're bringing them back.
Eye servant.
Spell it.
I-E-Y-E-S-E-R-V-A-N-T. It's a noun.
An eye servant. I believe that's eyeglasses. So ooh. I always guess first so that you can appear far smarter than I am.
I don't know if I can do that.
You're not going to get it. I mean, I can just tell you that.
I think it's not going to be glasses related. That's too easy.
It's too obvious, yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea.
So this one actually is a little bit more literal. So it's eye servant, a person who works only when someone is watching.
Oh, I like that.
Right.
That's an old term?
It is. It's a lost word, no longer used, historical word that we're bringing back. Eye servants. These are the people that we don't necessarily want.
So an employee that's goofing off unless the boss is watching.
Right.
I feel like that's very relevant today.
No. Yeah, I'm going to start using that one.
Okay.
You know, one of my first jobs when I was in high school, I worked at a Sears warehouse in a big mall. And one of the older employees, he was all of 18 probably, showed me, and I always felt uncomfortable, and I really didn't do it after the first time. I tried not to pair up with him. The bicycles were in boxes three levels up on the big shelving unit, and he figured out a way to make a little wall that he could go up on the third rafter and sleep.
Oh.
And nobody would kind of, and if somebody said, hey, are you up there? He'd say, yeah, I'm just putting this bike up here on the rack, and he'd climb out.
Funny. That is an interesting thing to share with somebody else.
He was an eye servant. Well, he wanted me to, because we were teamed up. So
right.
I was like, we're going to go up there and hang out and not work.
Do nothing.
And I felt very uncomfortable because it was my first week on the job. He was an eye servant.
Max, a good rule follower.
All right. So the history highlights of the day, the things that happen tomorrow, May 13th, so that you can appear smart or win bar bets, or if you happen to be on Jeopardy. These might be the questions. 1846, U.S. Congress declares war on Mexico. Mm. Apparently, we wanted New Mexico and parts of California and other places.
Right.
1865, the Battle of Palmito Ranch near Brownsville, Texas. It's the final engagement of the American Civil War. And I'm always kind of fascinated by this poor guy, Private John Jefferson Williams of B Company, 34th Regiment, Indiana Infantry, is the last man killed.
Oh.
Now, nobody wants to be killed, period.
Right.
But to be the last guy, the war is over, and you're the last guy that gets killed, it's kind, right. of, kind of feels a little meaningless.
Yeah.
All right. He agrees. So poor Private John Jefferson Williams. 1878, Danvers State Hospital, a psychiatric hospital in Massachusetts, opens. It later serves as inspiration for Arkham Sanitarium in the work of H.P. Lovecraft, which in turn inspires Arkham Asylum of the DC Batman universe.
Like, where is this going?
Isn't that a strange 3 degrees of separation?
That is. Yep. Okay.
All right. Moving on, though. 1920, the Socialist Party nominates Eugene V. Debs as its candidate for president in the upcoming November election. The slight complication, though, Debs is serving a 10-year sentence at a federal penitentiary.
Oh, my goodness.
So we don't make political comments here, I just thought I might throw that one out
today. Is
that
true?
It is.
We don't make political comments.
I think it's true.
Meanwhile, our guest is like, nope.
We're apolitical here.
Yeah.
Okay. He was in Atlanta. He wasn't due to get out until 1928, so it was 1920. He's convict number 2253. I want to know if that was on his
little side note
posters or anything. That would have been fun. All right. 1940, Churchill announces, and I can't do a good accent for him. Mm. I can do FDR, I can do Teddy Roosevelt, but I can't do Churchill, announces, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat.
It was a good quote.
Okay.
Yeah. Stood the test of time.
I didn't attempt to do an English accent, though. All right. 1958. This is almost going to be my history holiday today. The thing I think had the most impact. The trademark Velcro is registered. Velcro. It's everywhere.
I love it. Yep.
I do, too. Yep. 1981. Pope John Paul II is shot. Who would shoot the Pope? Even if you're not Catholic.
World rights, yeah.
All right. But our history holiday today, the thing I think had the most impact on history, 1607. Jamestown settlers arrive, with some 100 English colonists arrive along the east bank of the James River in Virginia. It's the first permanent European settlement.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we don't count Vikings.
Right. In a European settlement. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It had an impact, right? Impact on history for sure. Yeah. I think you got it all.
Which I always wonder, and they did. I mean, they attempted to wipe them out and rush them up. But if there had just been a unified front, I wonder how long it would have taken for Europeans to conquer the continent.
I don't know. I mean, lots of the diseases and stuff help too, right?
That's true.
And multiple
Here's
weapons.
Some blankets, and yeah. It does the half the battle for the Europeans, yes. All right. Did I miss anything? What I miss?
Well, this week is National Healthcare Week. Sometimes it's called National Hospital Week, but it's hospital/National Healthcare Week. So if you know someone, Mac, if you know someone that works in healthcare,
let me think about this.
Thank you.
Oh, make sure you tell Mark. Happy healthcare week.
Yes, thank you. Non-clinical side, but you know, there's lots of wheels that make that big machine work to keep people healthy. And yeah, so if you visit a doctor's office or hospital or anywhere, just tell them thank you. Last week was Nurses Week.
Oh.
And of course, you know, we love our nurses, right? I mean,
we didn't say anything about the nurses.
I know.
That's terrible.
Well, we are right now. You can still love them today too, and all week.
You know, I am not a in the hospital every other week kind of person or going to the emergency room often.
That's good.
But after having a health situation 9 years ago, I now regularly go to a doctor, which I never did before that for about 25 years of my life. I really have never had a rude or horrible experience.
That's great.
With
That's good.
Any of the healthcare professionals that have taken care of me.
Yeah. I love it. Keep them coming, Mac.
They've all been upbeat and professional and supportive. Yeah. And
I think that's the most, I mean, that's norm, right? I mean, there are bad experiences anywhere, but they're few, right?
Maybe.
Don't want to make a lot of mistakes in healthcare, though.
That's right. Yeah. And you know where else we don't want to make mistakes?
City government.
With local city government. That's a terrible segue.
Yeah, it is terrible. We have the city manager of Seaside, Spencer Kyle. You've been with the city of Seaside for 2 years. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And you plan on sticking around for a little while?
Hopefully. Okay. As long as they'll have me.
Oh, ooh, that's good.
I kind of answer it that way too, like as far as I'd like, but you never know. So excellent. So give us a little background before we get into Seaside and your job and what you do. Where'd you grow up and how'd you get interested in public service and government service?
Sure. Well, I am originally, well, still am, Canadian.
Oh, nice.
Born out west, but grew up out east. Grew up in Ottawa, which hopefully some of our listeners here know that that is the capital of Canada. That's a great trivia question that most people don't know. So I spent my time there, and it was a great experience. And then I came to BYU in Utah to go to school and stayed there after school. Met my wife there. And then my father had also got a degree in public administration like I have. He went a different route. He was an anti-tobacco lobbyist. That's why we were in Ottawa.
I love that.
But going to school... something about local government just spoke to me, and being able to have a direct impact on residents and policy, and you know, not being a little tiny cog in a big federal machine, but being able to really make a difference, and that's what really inspired me and motivated me to go into local government.
Wow. Okay, a lot of things.
I know. Where do we start? I'm so excited.
Okay. The biggest thing that popped out of me is anti-tobacco. What time period? And how did that become a passion, or was it just a job?
You know, I've never asked him that question, but I will say it is definitely a passion. He was very passionate about it, and still is to this day. Even in retirement, we still, as kids, get to hear all about it, even whether we want to or not. So it was 1980s and 1990s and into the early 2000s.
Was Canada sort of ahead of the ball on reminding people or telling people how dangerous tobacco was, or were we about the same? Do you know?
I think they were a little ahead. I know one of his early accomplishments was to ban smoking on flights in Canada, and then that kind of spread to the rest of the world. Things that we think are obvious today were not so much back then.
Can you imagine? Oh my gosh, it just sounds...
I kind of love all the old... You know, like you'll see the local Clatsop County Medical Association had a smoker of all the doctors, and they enjoyed a steak dinner and afterwards smoking cigars. Yeah. And you just think, and smoking on planes, that's just, we just can't imagine.
Well, there was
today,
you know, a smoking section and a non-smoking section of the plane, so you were fine.
Ridiculous. Yeah. But I mean, kind of the same with restaurants too, though. I mean, yes.
Although I have to say, I do love the argument of we're not targeting kids, and yet some of the biggest ads for cigarettes involved like Fred Flintstone. Hey, Barney, let's take a smoke break.
I mean, well, and vaping now and all of the fruity flavors and colors. And sure, it's definitely.
So then we'll get off this topic because it's not you, it's your dad. But did he feel like mission accomplished? I did it.
That must have been
satisfying.
I think it was very satisfying, but I think it was also on to the next thing. Really focusing, I think, on marketing and advertising and doing a lot there. And I think, you know, from his work, but from many people just like him, I think over a generation, we've certainly seen rates of tobacco use going down. And it's more of a rare thing today to see something like that.
Yeah. So talk about Ottawa. I've never actually been. It's the nation's capital. Mm-hmm. So all I picture is Washington, D.C. Is it all government or is it just...
It's mostly government. Okay. I mean, and businesses that are associated with that. So interestingly enough, it was the second choice as a capital. And it was a compromise because it's right in between the French and English. Mm-hmm. Right there on the Ottawa River, Quebec on one side, Ontario on the other. And just from the end of my street, we were on a hill, like a bluff, and I could look across the river and Quebec was there. And about 30% of the people in my neighborhood, I'm guessing, were native French speakers at home. And it's a federal government like D.C., except for looking a lot more British.
Oh, interesting.
All right. So why you choose to go to college to local government.
Mm-hmm.
And why the United States?
Yeah, why the United States?
That's kind of a big jump, too, to leave your country.
It is. And I something I hadn't really thought about growing up. So I went as a practicing Latter-day Saint. I wanted to go somewhere where there were other kids my age and things like that. And BYU is the place. And that's where my father went. My mother was there for a time as well. And so it was a natural place. I had other backup plans at other schools here in the States and in Canada, but that was my first choice. And I was lucky enough to get in and took off from there. And ended up being, that's where I met my wife. So it was meant to be or something.
Mm-hmm. So is BYU really, is that the only university with the Latter-day Saints?
They have three. There's also one, BYU, Idaho.
Okay.
The one's a little colder.
Yeah.
And then the really nice place we is BYU, Hawaii.
Oh, okay. But it's still BYU. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's just in the United States, though. Okay. Yep. That's interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, that plans for expansion there, folks.
They used to have a lot more schools.
Yeah.
But they kind of divested themselves of that. And so even some state schools in Arizona and Idaho and other places like that were founded originally as Latter-day Saint schools, but have, you know, were sold off or turned over, and they kind of got out of that business, except for these for that are left.
Do three of them really well rather than
right. It's true.
50 of them pretty good.
That's such a, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting. And yeah, then your wife, was she from Utah as well?
So she is also Canadian.
Oh, I love it.
That's crazy.
Now that we met at BYU, and the funny thing is we're related to each other, we found out. Luckily, it's all through marriage.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. But you said her, this is funny.
her great-grandfather, my grandmother, grew up on in the same little farming community of three families. And just by coincidence. So when I introduced her to my grandmother, she pulled out pictures from the old farm of her ancestors and things like that. And so she got the stamp of approval right away.
Oh, I love that.
I love that. That's amazing.
Genealogy. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Okay, so this might sound really ignorant, but do you have to become an American citizen at some point? And when do you choose to do that? And what was involved in that? What went into that thought?
That might have actually steered me slightly into local government, because to work for federal government, you have to be a U.S. citizen. There's not a prohibition on that in local government, although some cities do have some rules around that. So when I got my first job out of school, working for a city in Utah, I was a green card holding permanent resident at that time. And I think I'd been appointed to a board, a very prestigious board position. I was at the sewer treatment plant for the regional plant. And I'm in there getting sworn in, and I'm swearing to uphold the Constitution and things like that. I thought, I probably need to take care of this. And so here's another trivia bit. My wife was a U.S. citizen, and so I was able to get the green card through her and then naturalize. And she was able to get it. It's a chain reaction from her grandmother. Her grandmother, who was also in Canada, ended up marrying someone from the United States, and they settled in southern Utah. And her step-grandfather is John Wayne's half-brother.
Ooh.
So
that's pretty American right there.
I consider him to be my half-step great-uncle-in-law.
That is excellent.
I mean, which is true.
We're very close.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That is. So then you guys, you stayed in Utah, at least for a little bit.
Yep. Worked for most of my time for two cities in Utah for about 20 years before coming out here.
And size of those cities? Small, large, medium?
So both fast growing. The first city I started working for was about 4,500 residents, and it only incorporated with its first homes only a couple of years earlier.
Oh, wow.
And by the time I left in about 2017, it was probably 30,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And
astonishing growth.
Yeah, it was...
I mean, you have to.
It was hard to keep up.
I was going to say, you have to bring everything there, right? I
mean, build everything from scratch.
Utilities and oh my goodness.
Yep. So.
That's a good learn on the job.
It was place. Yeah. I mean, I started in a triple wide trailer. They put a desk in the corner of the main city council room, and that was my office. Until
how many elected officials were there? Was it like three?
We had five.
Okay, there was five. Okay.
And one of our counselors was also the city treasurer, who reported to the city manager. So it was small and growing, and there were a few things to grow through. Yeah.
That seems a little like that one could get fixed.
You're fired. No, you're fired.
Yeah.
It was tough when you had a performance evaluation on your boss. So, but it was a bit of the Wild West, and that city's come a long way. They're probably over 50,000 today.
Oh my goodness.
And have a Costco and lots of other things. And
still just one city. That's one.
That's one city for 14 years. And then my previous 5 years was, so that first city was Saratoga Springs. Second city was South Jordan. It's a Salt Lake suburb on the south side, and it's probably around 80,000 residents. And I was the director of administrative services, which just meant I had all the miscellaneous departments in the city under me. No connection whatsoever with each other. But again, I think both just gave me lots of experience in all kinds of different areas.
Yeah. So what leads to Seaside? This seems like a very different community and a different size of a community. Is it just the promotion of sitting in the big chair? But certainly it seems like
smaller the ocean?
Departments and that kind
certainly
of
that was part of it. Although I will admit, I always thought I would go into becoming a city manager kicking and screaming, because it can be a volatile position depending on where you go. And it always felt like you're getting on the roller coaster when you're clicking up the roller coaster and you're strapped in, you can't get out of it now. And so when you become a city manager, you know, it takes just one election for things to change, and you're strapped in, you're tied to it, and you don't know what's going to happen. And so, but it was the right time. I had always loved the Pacific Northwest and had interviewed here when I was coming out of graduate school, but that was in 2003, and we're coming off the dot-com bubble burst and recession, and no one was hiring. And so it took me a little bit longer, but to come out here. And when I saw the recruitment for this, my oldest son was in kindergarten, so it was a good time. And I thought, what a great opportunity I have two sons, for them to be raised on the beach in what a unique place, and great opportunity to put down roots and be able to live and work in this community.
So 2 years on the job, and I'm just going to remind folks, just in case you're joining us, this is Spencer Kyle, the city manager for the city of Seaside. Been with the city of Seaside now 2 years, loving it. And your family, I mean, so 2 years now of being, I mean, that's different for you and your wife, at least, because you were in that sunny desert for so long. How do you adjust to the differences?
Take a lot of vitamin D supplements. No, I think I'll admit, my wife was pretty nervous about the weather, and she thought it would just be doom and gloom for 9 months of the year. And maybe we had a good first winter here, or maybe she came in with low enough expectations that it was a great experience that first winter. And my sons have loved it. They have great friends here. I think the only thing that they get hung up on is when we have a week of rain and they're itching to go play soccer or to go play baseball, that's when they say, why couldn't we keep living in Utah? I said, well, it'd be snowing.
Right.
And then when it's done snowing, it turns to 100 degrees. So either way, you're not playing outside.
A little bit more moderate.
So I do want to get into your job at some point in the city, but I do want to finish family a little bit here. I like, you get little guys, and they obviously like playing baseball, and they like playing soccer. So what other areas in Seaside or Clatsop County have you found enjoyment in, and what do you like to do as a family? Do you go to the beach since you've moved to a beach?
Well, we probably go to the beach a lot less than I thought we would. But certainly we like to get together with friends and have a bonfire and hang out. And sometimes my kids will not want to go to the beach, but as soon as we get there, they love it and they can be entertained all day. Last summer we picked up a puppy. And so now two boys and a puppy at the beach, play all day. Other things, I love the outdoors. I like trail running and hiking, and I think my favorite place to go is to Fort Clatsop and the trails around there. I've been able to hike Saddle Mountain and Tillamook Head once, and I need to do it some more. My kids, their favorite place to go is the Maritime Museum. They like to go back
Those
and back.
Guys.
Yeah.
Gotta bring them here next.
Being able to go out and explore and things like that. Anytime there's a washed up whale or something like that, they're the first to want to go out and see that.
That's fun.
Excellent.
Which seems to happen like every year now.
So you said something that resonates with me about one election, and that's one of the wonderful things I like about my position as a nonprofit, that at least there's a process and I have a little say in who my bosses become, but you are at the whim of an election and all of a sudden there could be five crazy people that have five different strange agendas that are all against each other. So talk a little bit about just the city of Seaside, the population, how big of a staff the whole government has.
And sure.
Talk a little bit about your job, and you got 4 minutes.
That 4 minute pitch. So we're about 7,200-7,300 residents, but as anyone who knows the area knows, you know, it's much bigger than that. And so we always have tourists in town, and it can be as many as 30,000 extra visitors on a summer day, or 4th of July, or Hood to Coast, or volleyball. It's a lot more than that. And I think that's something we've all learned with, but we all, I think, recognize too that we have a lot of amenities that a city of 7,200 would not have in terms of restaurants and things to do. We have probably about 90 employees, again, higher than our population would indicate. But our police and our public works and our fire, a lot is there at because of the need of our tourists. We have an interesting demographic. Certainly, we have a lot of retirees, and we have a lot of people working in our hospitality industry in the city. Things that keep us busy. There's always fires to be put out, not just by the fire department, but also from the city manager's office and the city council. And, you know, we struggle with some of the same things that other communities in Oregon and on the coast are struggling with. And I think one that we all recognize is the cost of housing. And we're working on projects right now to try to bring in housing that where you can buy down what the rents will be, and so they can't exceed a certain amount. And so we hope that that's going to provide, especially for our workers. It's really sad to me when a business is closed in the high season because they don't have workers who can be there. Certainly, we're trying to deal with our houseless population in Seaside. We've always had one, but it has certainly changed in the last few years with legislation and law changes. And I think the big catalyst or thing that's really disrupted all of that is fentanyl, and that's something that we see. Mm-hmm. Not just in Seaside, but I think it's all around all of our communities. Beyond that, I think our biggest thing and my goal for Seaside is to really set us up for success for the next 20 or 30 years, and in really getting an understanding of our infrastructure and reinvesting and coming up with these long-term plans so that we can make sure that Seaside is a destination we want to visit, we want to live in, you know, for the next generation.
We want to work in, we want to drive and hang out in. Yes. Yeah.
And that's something you and I were talking about before we went on the air, is that nobody's coming to just one of these communities in Glassop mm-hmm. County. Nobody's going just to Cannon Beach and then going away. They're visiting Astoria, Warrenton, Seaside, Cannon Beach. They're here.
Or they don't know the difference too, right? Or they honestly, think that Astoria is on the ocean. And and you say that, you know, they say, I went to Astoria and I saw the ocean.
Yeah.
Well, that was a quarantine, but you know, it's okay.
Yeah, I made the mistake of saying something along those lines when I first got here. Like, why don't we have one school right. district?
Oh, and, yeah.
That did not go over well.
That's a whole other show, Mac.
It is.
But we're so glad you're here, Spencer. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your life and what brought you here and what keeps you here. So
thank you for having me. It's been great.
All right. So you should all go visit Seaside at least once in the next week and go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.